Here's part four of the horror talk of Larry Ehler. So trial of Robert Little, Ehler's testimony. Robert Little was brought on trial on April 11, 1991. He was tried in Vermilion County before Judge Don Darnell and entered a formal plea of not guilty on this date. Ehler testified against his alleged accomplice at his trial. At this trial, claiming he and Little had both committed the murder of Agin on December 19, 1982. According to Ehler, the two had regularly socialized within Indianapolis' gay community, occasionally bringing young men to Little's home to engage in sex, with Little frequently photographing the sexual acts. Testimony from Ehler asserted that on the day of the murder, Little had suggested to do a scene in which he had understood to mean murder for sexual pleasure, as Little photographed the event with a Polaroid camera. He and Little had lured Agin, whom Ehler had regularly known through frequenting the car wash where Agin had worked, into Little's vehicle in Terre Haute, initially with the promise of Agin simply drinking with the two. Although Agin was heterosexual, he agreed to participate in a bondage and photography session for money. The two men had initially driven Agin to a location close to the Terre Haute Regional Airport, where a guardsman ordered the three of airport grounds. Ehler then drove toward an abandoned shed close to Indiana State Road 663. At this location, Agin's hands were tied above a beam before he was gagged and bound. According to Ehler, Little then shouted, quote, "Get out the knife," end quote, before he proceeded to stab Agin. Ehler further testified Little had repeatedly masturbated while photographing him as he had bound and stabbed again. Little had also stabbed the young man before stating to Ehler, quote, "Okay, kill the motherfucker," end quote. Little had taken Agin's undershirt from the crime scene and had later complained to Ehler the overall murder ritual had been too fast for his liking. Cross-examination. Upon cross-examination, one of Little's defense attorneys, Dennis Zahn, asserted that because Little had appeared as a witness for the prosecution at Ehler's earlier trial for the murder of Daniel Bridges, he was simply implicating Little in a further murder he had committed as a form of revenge. In support of this contention, Zahn questioned Ehler about 15 other alleged victims of his. On each occasion, Ehler exercised his Fifth Amendment rights and suggested Little's attorneys could ask their client about those homicides. When questioned as to whether he had dismembered the body of Daniel Bridges, Ehler admitted that he had committed this act, although he denied responsibility for the teenager's actual murder. Further questioned as to why no photographs had been found depicting Agin's restraint and murder in police searches of Little's home in either 1983 or 1990, Ehler stated Little had disposed of the photographs following the 1983 search of his home, adding the pictures had been inside a closet in Little's bedroom, which had not been searched. Okay, sorry about that. On April 12th, Dr. John Pless recounted the autopsy he had performed upon Agin's body on December 28, 82. Dr. Pless testified as to having viewed several eviscerated bodies in his career before stating, quote, "This is the most extensively mutilated body I've seen without the body being cut into pieces," end quote. Pless testified that many of the beatings, stabbing, and slashing injuries had been inflicted after Agin was deceased. Although numerous deep wounds to the neck and groin had been inflicted while the young man was still alive, he further testified that he could not conclusively pinpoint the actual time of Agin's death, but stated his belief the young man had been killed before December 21st. Defense attorney James Voiles claimed his client had not been in Indiana in the week before Christmas in any year between 1958 and 1989. To support this contention, Little's mother testified she had relocated from Indiana to Florida in 1958, that her son had first visited her home approximately a week before Christmas that year, and that he had, quote, "never missed a Christmas," end quote, at her home in any year since. Furthermore, he had invariably stayed at her home until New Year's Day. However, this claim had earlier been discredited by by prosecutor Mark Greenwell. He had introduced into evidence ledger records proving Little's vehicle had been brought to a Terre Haute garage for minor repair work on December 21st, 1982, and a phone bill proving a call had been made from Little's home on the same day before the prosecutors had rested their case on April 15. Although Little had been prepared to testify in his defense, his attorneys advised him not to do so on April 16, explaining their belief his mother's testimony had made an impression on the jurors' minds, and that if he testified, his sexuality will largely be on trial. Closing arguments: both prosecution and defense attorneys delivered their closing arguments before the jury on April 17. Mark Greenwell described the murder as a performance orchestrated at Little's instruction, adding that the murder had been committed to satisfying the defendant's lust for subtle masochistic bondage. Greenwell also inferred Ayler had nothing to personally gain by asserting Little had actively participated in this murder, adding Ayler had readily admitted to physically taking the defendant's life. Dennis Zahn described his client as an individual victimized because of his sexuality, and portrayed Ayler as a convicted murderer, cynically fabricating accusations against his client in a last-ditch effort to have his death sentence commuted, referencing the 24 occasions in which Ayler had exercised his Fifth Amendment rights in response to questioning by the defense. Zahn ended his closing arguments by asking the jurors, quotes, "Will you convict an honorable man on the word of Larry Ayler?" End quotes. Acquittal: after deliberating for over 7 hours, the jury found Little not guilty of all charges on April 17. Little grinned as the verdict was read before hugging his attorney as Stephen Egan's brother and parents ran out of the courtroom. Oh! Following his acquittal, Little held a press conference in which he informed reporters, quotes, "I'm just so happy the ordeal is over," end quotes, before stating his intentions to return to his teaching position at the Indiana State University. The death. Larry Ayler died in the infirmary of the Pontiac Correctional Center on March 6, 1994. His death was due to AIDS-related complications. He had been seriously ill for approximately 10 days before his death. I guess he was diagnosed with AIDS, but I'm not sure if he ever went to a doctor for that. Like, what the fuck? But there are clips of Larry Ayler, of course, identifying victims of serial killer Larry Ayler.
Killed Danny Bridges? No, I didn't.
Larry Ayler and his horrific...
Oh, Ayler? I thought that was Ayler. What do you freaking do?
...killing spree are as unforgettable as the faces of his still nameless victims.
I think about them every day. They're in my office. They're referred to as my kids.
Bones, dental records, DNA results, and other crime scene evidence are clues to a mystery Scott McCord has labored years to solve.
If my kids went missing today, I would hunt till the day I died for them. So somebody has to miss them.
But who? 30 years ago, the Newton County coroner was about the same age as the young men found buried in the farm country of Newton and Jasper counties. In the early 80s, hitchhikers, male prostitutes, dozens of young men living on the fringe of society disappeared. Their remains were later found in shallow graves near interstate exits and along state highways.
Back in 1983, it seemed like every other week more bodies were being discovered in farm fields like this one, while scores of lawmen scattered between Chicago, Terre Haute, Indianapolis, even as far away as Ohio, struggled to compare notes, connect the dots, and put an end to the carnage.
A special police task force eventually caught up with Larry Ayler, an Indiana handyman who split his time between Indianapolis, Terre Haute, and Chicago. Convicted in Chicago of one murder and sentenced to death, Ayler confessed with remarkable detail to 21 brutal killings.
Larry confessed to just picking them up along the road. They were just hitchhiking.
In the Terre Haute area, post-mortem exams and a forensic artist show what two of the men probably looked like. Victim one, white, 17 to 23 years old, between 5'2 and 5'9. He had crude tattoos of a cross and a rectangle on his right arm. Victim two, African-American, 15 to 18 years old, 5'8 to 6'2. He wore a gold jeans belt buckle and a belt with devil stitched in red. Victim three, no sketch, but the white man carried a lighter engraved with Arlene. He was in his mid-20s, 5'6 to 5'8, with long reddish hair.
There's somebody's son. There's somebody's brother.
Someone's friend, someone's student. Yet after sending flyers and information to hundreds of communities, McCord has heard from no one, received not one good lead.
None yet.
You say that with optimism.
These kids will be home. I will get them home. I want their parents to bury them.
And after all these years, peacefully lay to rest an undying, painful mystery.
Rich Van Wyk, Channel 13, Eyewitness News.
I knew there was really something wrong. Mother of Larry Eiler, where victim speaks out after 33 years. Wow.
Larry Eiler was a serial killer with Wabash Valley ties. The ISU student confessed to killing 22 young men between 1982 and 1984. Last night, we showed you the faces of two boys still unidentified. Two of Eiler's victims picked up from Terre Haute, their bodies dumped in Newton County, Indiana. 33 years later, never claimed by their families. Tonight, the story of another Eiler victim through the eyes of a mother who still searches for justice. Seventy-seven-year-old Barbara Agin of Terre Haute has lived through more tragedy than most can imagine. Barbara has buried all three of her children at this Terre Haute cemetery. The family's firstborn, Stephen Agin, was taken from them at the young age of 23, murdered by a serial killer named Larry Eiler.
I think Steve just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. I think he knew him just well enough to say, hey, do you want to ride?
Barbara says Stephen was jogging home from the bowling alley on a warm December Sunday. Larry Eiler worked just a few blocks from the Agins family car wash in Terre Haute. On December 18th, 1982, Larry offered Stephen a ride, but never took him home.
After a day or so, I knew that there was really something wrong.
Stephen's body was found in a wooded area near Highway 63, not far from Newport, Indiana, in Vermilion County. He had been handcuffed, blindfolded, and gagged, his abdomen and chest sliced open, and horizontal gashes to his throat and gut.
I went back to the funeral home and I wanted to see him, but they wouldn't let me see him because he was in too bad a shape. Yeah, he said it was worse than any car wreck victim that they'd ever had because they actually just split him open.
It has been nearly 34 years since the Agins laid their son to rest. Barbara is quick to tell you Stephen was fun-loving, kind, and very family-oriented. She's also quick to admit she does not hate anyone for her loss.
For the sake of my own sanity, I do forgive him. And at the same time, you know, Larry Eiler had a mother that was grieving, and she was losing a son, too.
Eiler confessed to Agin's brutal murder in an attempt to avoid the death penalty. He admitted to 21 other killings in these written confessions released after his death in prison, giving closure to families desperately needing answers. But there are still two victims without a name, two victims without a home.
And then here's a young boy that was the hitchhiker.
We showed Barbara Agin the boy's pictures. This mother can't imagine families not searching for their loved one.
Somebody knows that somebody's missing. And like I say, they loved them when they were born. I don't know why they don't love them now and bring them home.
Through all the tragedy and heartache, Barbara Agin was able to bring her son home. She says it brings closure knowing they found him, knowing he's buried by other loved ones, knowing where he is. And through her loss, this extremely strong woman can perhaps teach us all a lesson.
I guess the good Lord just gives you strength and you just go through it.
She is an amazing woman. If you know anything about these boys, these two unidentified boys, there is important information, contact information for you on our website, WTHITV.com.
make confessions. Holy shit.
He was one of Illinois' most notorious killers, but just how notorious, we don't know. It was a secret he kept in life, but tomorrow he may reveal it in death. Good evening, I'm Robin Robinson.
And I'm Walter Jacobson, and our top story tonight, he was convicted of two murders, but police say they think Larry Eiler was a serial killer with at least two dozen victims, maybe as many as 50. He died in prison on Sunday, but the story isn't over yet. He reportedly made some dying declarations that could be revealed tomorrow. Our reporter Rick Leventhal is here with more.
Did Larry Eiler make a deathbed confession? His attorney didn't call us back tonight, but reports are that Eiler may have told all about his alleged string of homicides before he died and may have implicated others, including a university professor still teaching in Indiana. Now, parents of the victims are relieved to see some movement in the case, and they are glad to see Eiler gone.
I am happy that he's dead, yes, very much so. Because he'll never get out now and hurt anybody else.
Carmen Pauly says her only regret about the death of convicted killer Larry Eiler is she didn't get to see him die in the electric chair. Eiler was arrested for the brutal stabbing murder of Pauly's son, Ralph Calise, in 1983, but released on a legal technicality. 1 year later, Eiler killed and dismembered 15-year-old Danny Bridges in his Northside apartment, leaving the body parts in a dumpster outside. Eiler was a suspect in the murders of up to 50 other young men and boys in Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois. He died of AIDS at the Pontiac Correctional Center Sunday, but may have done some talking first, implicating himself and possibly others in the unsolved crimes.
If you make dying declarations and the court of law, they consider that very important. It's not hearsay anymore, because he's got nothing to gain from this.
Jera Lynn Kolarik may know more about Eiler than anyone else. She wrote a book about his case and says he may have kept a token box filled with mementos from the men and boys he killed. But did Eiler act alone? 3 years ago, Eiler told police this man, Robert Little, his former lover, helped him murder 23-year-old car wash attendant Stephen Agin. Little, a library science professor at Indiana State University, was tried and acquitted in 1991.
I'm sorry that the Agin family had to be put through this awful ordeal.
Did Eiler leave police with clues on Little or others? Cops wish they could have talked to him first. Most people are just happy he's gone.
He was a real serial killer. Is he the worst serial killer? I would say yes.
Well, if Eiler did confess the crimes on his deathbed, they are admissible in a court of law. But because police had no chance to question him about details, any statements implicating others could be picked apart by a defense attorney. But many of the victims' families are just happy to see these cases put to rest, and we will be much closer to that tomorrow. Robin?
Larry Eiler, that Terre Haute man called by some police a suspect in a string of homosexual murders, is making another court move against police. He's already filed this civil rights complaint, seeking $250,000 from several Indiana and Illinois police officers on grounds that they violated his rights by arresting him, searching his truck and this house on Keene Lane in Terre Haute where he'd stayed, all without cause. Tonight, Eiler's attorney tells us he's filing a new motion to the case, asking the police be made to turn over their notes and any lab tests they may have on him, that they be made to give back address books he says they took from him, and be made to stop contacting people listed in those books. Police tonight say they're looking for a man from Chicago, believed to be in Kentucky, who they say might help identify the killer.
The dismembered body of a man police believe to be in his 20s was found in garbage bags behind an apartment on the north side of Chicago, just a few doors away from where Larry Eiler lives. Neighbors in the area say they saw Eiler recently carrying bags to the dumpster. Chicago police tell me they are still in the process of searching the area for evidence, and they are questioning Eiler in connection with this murder. The 30-year-old man was taken into custody this morning after a janitor discovered the cut-up body in the trash.
Well, I'm a janitor of that building. I have to carry out the garbage, and I need some room for that garbage. So therefore, I find that ugly things, in the bag. So I opened it up, one of them, and I saw the leg. You could tell, that's about it.
The body totally cut off?
No, the body was just, the arm was off, the neck was off, the leg was off, and he's got a stab wound, about 7-8 stab wound.
Eiler has been a suspect in as many as 19 other homosexual slayings and has been out of jail on a $10,000 bond on a murder charge. I'm Marla Keller reporting for News Center 10.
It began in June with a call to the hotline set up by the Special Task Force investigating the murders.
Police say a caller told them that Larry Eiler was a violent man, capable of murder. Based on that tip, detectives did investigate Eiler and obtained a search warrant to confiscate Eiler's pickup truck and other evidence. Yesterday, as Eiler left a hearing on a civil rights suit he filed, he was served with another warrant. This time, he was seized for hair and blood samples, and after those samples were compared with evidence at the FBI lab in Washington, Eiler was arrested for murder and held in lieu of $1 million bond. Today, his attorney, friends, and family went to court to get that bond reduced. During the proceedings, the prosecutor presented hearsay testimony in which the victims of two separate knife attacks in 1978 and 1982 identified Eiler as their attacker. Eiler's attorney presented evidence to the contrary, but despite his pleas, the judge decided bond would remain at $1 million, and Eiler remains in police custody.
There's absolutely no way that he's ever committed a murder. I'm very upset, but I believe in him.
Larry contends that he is totally and completely innocent, and the charges are totally false. He maintains that he was not involved in this particular killing. He was not around here on the 31st. He has no relationship to it, and that he's being railroaded.
The body of Eiler's alleged victim was found in a shallow grave in this field in Lake County, Illinois. Like the victims in a string of murders from central Indiana to northern Illinois, 28-year-old Ralph Calise was stabbed repeatedly and found with his pants around his ankles.
There is a strong possibility the investigation may total 19 or more victims. In the opinion of the investigative authorities, 13 of the victims were directly connected with homosexual activities. This type of sordid crime can be compared with the sadistic gratification that John Wayne Gacy must have enjoyed in his vicious crimes, which I believe are unsurpassed in the annals of recorded sexual murders and degradation.
Eiler is considered a suspect in the murder of two Indianapolis men, 21-year-old John Roach and 22-year-old Daniel McNeevy. Police say he's also a suspect in the death of a third central Indiana man, Steve Agin of Terre Haute.
It would take, I would say, at least several months to determine at what point, if that point ever develops, that he would be charged with any cases in Indiana. However, with this particular case up here, we're optimistic.
Come on, really? Why did we show? God. Why? I hate.
And he had.
Sheriff Jim Jenkins remembers the case well. He and another deputy were called to Spring Hill and Canal Roads in response to a stabbing. Once there, they found a man in his underwear, bound at the wrists and ankles, a stab wound in his chest. Larry Eiler showed up at the scene moments later. Eiler explained that he and the man were playing out one of Eiler's sexual fantasies. Eiler was armed with a 10-inch Bowie knife during the encounter.
I believe his words were that he forgot he had a knife in his hand and he pushed this boy. And when he pushed him, he stabbed him.
The man never pressed charges against Eiler. Jenkins says he was too embarrassed. But the incident made it into the pages of a biography on Eiler. Author Geralyn Kolarik describes the stabbing in her book, Freed to Kill, The True Story of Larry Eiler. Jenkins says he didn't believe the stabbing was an accident 16 years ago. He's still convinced today.
A reasonable person, logical person, would just not believe that you forgot you had a 10-inch bladed knife in your hand. I think his scene got out of hand, is what I think.
Believe that Mr. Eiler.
Of the 21 victims Eiler's attorney listed today, three may be involved in local cases that remain unsolved. So far, police are hesitant to give grieving families false hopes.
We don't think it's fair to upset a family if we don't have good information.
Jenkins, meantime, wonders if it all could have been avoided if Eiler had only sought help 16 years ago. Or if his victim had only pressed charges.
Maybe lots of murders could have been prevented. I don't know. It's very tragic story all the way around.
John Barr, Action 10 News, Terre Haute.
The search was conducted here at 376 Keene Lane. Indiana State Police say they took a van full of Larry Eiler's personal belongings, which will be inventoried and then sent to the state police lab to be analyzed. Police say they confiscated these items to help in the investigation of at least three unsolved gay-related murders in Indiana. News Center 10 has learned those murders are Steve Agin of Terre Haute, whose body was found in Vermilion County last December, John Roach, whose body was found in Putnam County, and Daniel McNeevy, who was found in Hendricks County in May of 1982. The 31-year-old Eiler is currently being held in the Lake County, Illinois jail on a $1 million bond charged in connection with the gay murder of a Chicago man. I'm Marla Keller for News Center 10.
A cold case cracked. Detectives in Jasper County have helped identify a previously unknown victim of infamous serial killer Larry Eiler.
Eiler was responsible for nearly two dozen murders around the Midwest, including 10 in Indiana. Adam Pinsker explains how police solved one of those cases.
In 1982, William Lewis was hitchhiking from Texas back to Indiana. When he disappeared, he was last seen near Vincennes. His body was found up in Jasper County. Now, almost 40 years later, his family finally has closure.
My dad always told us the mob killed him. So, like, we didn't, you know, I think it was just a joke.
But investigators from the Jasper County Sheriff's Office were serious about finding out what happened to William Lewis. Even if it took four decades, and with the help of a company called the Redgrave Research Forensic Services, they're able to confirm that serial killer Larry Eiler killed Lewis.
They had drank some beer and they had taken some drugs, and they wound up here in Jasper County, where he basically bound him, gagged him, and assaulted and killed him.
Eiler, who died in 1994, told his attorney he killed someone but could not remember who it was. The sheriff's office saved Lewis's remains, and in 2018, coroner Andrew Borsma exhumed Lewis's body. That's when the remains were tested.
My grandmother never did. To the day she died, she never did. She never accepted that anything. Like, she was like, he's still out there.
Lewis's nephew, Joshua Shuck, asked people who knew his uncle about what he was like growing up.
But he played football in high school. He was real quiet, kind of like stayed to himself.
Shuck and the rest of the Lewis family say they're grateful to finally get some closure after all these years.
After a memorial service, Lewis will be buried next to his father in Peru, Indiana. Now, the Jasper County Sheriff's Office wants to use this technology again, forensic genealogy, to help crack some other cold cases in the county. In Rensselaer, Adam Pinsker for Wish TV, wishtv.com, and follow us on Facebook.
Convicted killer Larry Eiler's deathbed confessions may help close the books on dozens of officially unsolved murders. Tonight, authorities admit to being curious, though skeptical, of the lawyer who's promising to tell all about the murders. Channel 2's Jay Levine has exclusive details.
Larry Eiler tried this once before, while he was still alive, offering to confess to some murders and to implicate others. One of those alleged accomplices, University professor Robert Little, even stood trial in Indiana and was acquitted of helping Eiler kill 23-year-old Stephen Agin in Terre Haute back in 1982. Eiler got 60 years in jail for that murder. But it was the 1983 Chicago murder of 15-year-old Danny Bridges that led to the death sentence Eiler and lawyer Kathleen Zellner were trying to bargain away.
Somebody else ought to kill him and make him suffer, like he made Danny suffer.
Eiler did suffer with AIDS until he died yesterday. The law enforcement community appears less than enthusiastic about the promise of new revelations. A spokesman for Cook County State's Attorney Jack O'Malley says if she has evidence of crimes, she should come to law enforcement. Zellner instead went to Pontiac State Prison today. Eiler was on death row here before he died in the infirmary. He listed his mother as next of kin, and she was notified of his death. But it was Zellner who demanded all his belongings, especially pages and pages of written confessions that he'd been working on just before he died. Prison officials refused to give them to her, even though Zellner claimed Eiler had willed all his writings to her. Geraldine Kolarik's book, Freed to Kill, chronicled Eiler's grisly murder spree.
I hate to talk in his defense, but I'm sure Larry Eiler wanted to make amends with family members.
But the family of Chicagoan Michael Bauer, who disappeared 11 years ago tonight, said the confession is not going to bring him back. Their only comment about Eiler, let him rot in hell. But authorities who investigated other cases, like the murder of John Johnson, will be listening carefully.
It would give me a sense of satisfaction to know that we did have the right person.
Eiler's death row deathbed confessions could establish him as one of the worst serial killers ever. Worse than Jeffrey Dahmer, as bad or worse than even John Wayne Gacy. But tonight, the families of Eiler's victims tell me...
I'm going to do a part five, 1 second.